Once upon a time, there was a prince who was very short. From infancy, he lagged behind the other children that was his own age and height. And as he was growing up, he was forever the target of pranks and jokes by his peers. Even when he reached adulthood, he never got to 5 feet. Now in time, his father, the king, died. And this short prince took over the throne. But even then, the taunting didn't stop. In his presence, he would be referred to as His Highness, but when he got outside the court, they called him His Lowness. The people did not show him the kind of respect that he wanted. They wouldn't even bow to him in public. Well, the king decided to take a vacation. And before he left, he called in several carpenters and workmen and gave them specific instructions for what they were to do while he was gone. During the few weeks that he was away, the workers labored in the palace. Upon his return, the king was pleased to find that the work had been done. Every doorway in the palace had been lowered to 5 feet. He could walk through every entrance into a room and not even have to duck. But for anybody else in the kingdom to come into his presence, they would have to bow their heads. And he was heard to say to himself, "They may not respect me, but they will certainly bow down to come into my presence." Now, that's an apocryphal story, but it does have a point. There is a spiritual application here that if we want to enter into the presence of God, we must go through a low door. Now, that does not mean that next Sunday when you come to church, our magnificent back doors are going to be lowered to 5 feet. Because it has nothing to do with our physical posture, but it has to do with the attitudes of our heart. The only way into God's presence is through a low door. Solomon teaches in the book of Proverbs that the requirement of heaven is humility. Proverbs 15:33 states, "The fear of the Lord teaches a man wisdom, and humility comes before honor." Now, we've seen this verse before when we talked about the fear of the Lord. We examined this passage, and we see that humility and the fear of the Lord are very closely related. Humility is one of the attitudes that define the fear of the Lord. When we see God for who He really is, when we see ourselves in comparison, we ought to be humbled. But what do we mean when we use that word, humility? Andrew Murray gave a near-perfect definition of humility, as well as what humility is not. He writes, "Humility is perfect quietness of heart. It is to expect nothing, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing that is done against me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me, when I am blamed or despised. It is to have a blessed home in the Lord, where I can go in and shut the door and kneel to my Father in secret and am at peace as in a deep sea of calmness when all around and above is trouble." The humble person is not one who thinks lowly of himself, but the one who simply does not think of himself at all. Another classic preacher, Horatius Bonner, had this to say about what humility is and what it is not. "Let us fling away self-esteem and high-mindedness, for it is the very essence of unbelief. Be meek, Be poor in spirit. Be humble. Be teachable. Be gentle. Easy to be entreated. Putting away all high thoughts and lofty imaginations, either about what we are or what we can do. Content to take the obscurest corner in the lowest seat. And this not to indulge a false lowliness or that pride that apes humility. Feeding our vanity with the thought that we are martyrs. Puffing up our fleshly mind with the idea of our wonderful condescension. Or by brooding over our supposed wrongs and trials. Let us be truly humble, as was the Son of God. Content to live unknown. To do our work unnoticed, as a work not for the eye of man, but for God. If you have gifts, use them quietly and modestly, not ostentatiously. Do not be forward to tell your experience or give your opinion or to take rank above your seniors. Do not think that all zeal or wisdom is confined to you and the few about you. Do not condemn others because they don't quite go along with you in all things, nor speak of them as cold and dead and unspiritual. Do not think that no one cares for souls but yourself, that no one can state the gospel or pray like you do, or that God is not likely to bless anyone as much as you. Be lowly, and show this not by always speaking evil of yourself to others, or by using that conceited phrase, in my humble opinion, as some do in order to show their humility, but simply by not speaking of yourselves at all. Keep self in the background and don't say or do anything that looks like baiting your hook for a little praise. Humility is very fragile. In fact, it's a virtue that the moment you realize you have it, you lost it. You ever heard somebody say, I'm humble and proud of it? Can't do it. Humility is my best quality. Not anymore. Because when we recognize it, it's gone. And it is so contrary to our nature. That's why it's so rare. You see, everything about our human nature, from the time we are born, we're self-centered. We're self-oriented. We are self-promoting. We want people to look at me. We want to be the center of the universe. That's what our nature is from the time we're born. And humility is the exact opposite of that. Humility is looking at others. It's looking at God. It's not always focusing on me. Now, pride can mask itself as humility in the form of an inferiority complex. You've known people like that, haven't you? Oh, I can't do anything. I'm not good for anything. Poor me. And we think, oh, that's a humble person. No, they're not. That is actually a form of pride. Why? Because it's all about me. Even though everything that I'm saying about me is negative, it's still about me. And that is a very subtle, insidious form of pride. Now you might ask, why is humility the requirement of heaven? The answer is this: without humility, nobody would ever trust God. Jesus said in Matthew 5:3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." What does that mean? To be poor in spirit, it's to acknowledge our spiritual poverty. It's to acknowledge our bankrupt nature when it comes to God. We have nothing to offer to God in and of ourselves. And once we realize that, when we recognize that we are sinners, we are deserving of nothing but God's judgment and His wrath, that we have nothing to offer, nothing to plead, nothing with which we can buy God's favor. At that moment, we can recognize our need and come to Christ. I am convinced that the vast number of people who will spend eternity away from God in hell will not be there because they've never heard about Jesus. Now, unfortunately, there are some in that condition. There are some who live in a place where the gospel is not preached. They may never hear the good news about Jesus Christ and what He did for them. But my guess is that the vast majority of people that will spend eternity in hell will do so because they're not convinced they need Him. They have convinced themselves that I can handle it on my own. I'm the master of my destiny. I am the captain of my soul. And when we take that attitude, we will never come to God to ask for forgiveness, to ask Him to adopt us into His family. It's never going to happen as long as we are convinced we can do it ourselves. And that is why humility is the requirement for heaven. It's no wonder then, as Andrew Murray concludes, humility, the place of entire dependence on God, is from the very nature of things the first duty and the highest virtue of man. And so pride, or the loss of this humility, is the root of every sin and evil. Humility is the greatest virtue we can have. Pride is the greatest vice. If you were to ask good Christians, what's the worst possible sin you can commit? You'd find a variety of answers. But I believe if you go into God's Word, God would say it's pride. Pride is the worst sin. It is indeed the root of all other sins. Proverbs goes on to demonstrate both the rewards of humility and the repercussions of haughtiness or pride. Now, I've mentioned this before in a previous message. God hates pride. I know that's a strong word, but God reacts strongly to pride. Max Lucado notes, God doesn't dislike arrogance. It's not that He disapproves of arrogance. He's not unfavorably disposed toward arrogance. God hates arrogance. If you look at Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19, you'll see a list of things that God hates. There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to Him. And what's number one? Haughty eyes. Other translations render that a proud look. Pride, arrogance. Proverbs 8:13 adds, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance. If there is a top 10 list of what God hates, pride is the number one answer. C.S. Lewis wrote, according to Christian teachers, the essential vice, the utmost evil, is pride. Unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that are mere flea bites in comparison. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride leads to every other vice. It is the complete anti-God state of mind. So it's not a surprise that God would take such a strong stand against pride and for humility. What I'd like to do now is to go through the various verses in Proverbs as they appear in our Bibles that deal with these two subjects. First, there is Proverbs 11:2. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. In the original Hebrew, we have a rare case here of rhyming words. The Hebrew word zedon, which is translated pride, it literally means boiling up. And kalon, which is translated disgrace. The meaning of that is deflated. You think of a balloon. When a balloon gets full of hot air, it's blown up, right? Isn't that a picturesque way of describing a proud person? They're full of themselves. They're full of hot air. But what happens? Something comes along and it pricks that balloon and it lets all the air out. You ever seen a balloon with all the air out? Looks kind of pathetic, doesn't it? Just kind of all limp and just nothing. That's what pride does. Pride blows us up. But then when reality sets in, all the air gets let out and we're disgraced. Now, meanwhile, in the same verse, the word that's translated humility here, it's a very rare word in the Hebrew. It's found only here and in one other verse, Micah 6:8. It appears as a verb, where Micah says, "What does God require of you but to walk humbly with your God?" That's the same Hebrew word here that Solomon uses. When we develop true humility, we will find the wisdom that comes only from seeing God for who He is and ourselves in comparison. Humility gives us perspective. Humility helps us to see things as they really are, to see life in its true perspective. And it will keep us away from things that will lead to disgrace. Next, we'll go to Proverbs 13:10. Pride only breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Whenever you find a fight, whenever you see a quarrel, you can bet pride is behind it. I mean, it goes back to when we're in grade school, right? You see two kids fighting on the playground. What started this? He says his dad's better than my dad. Pride. Or you get little kids that'll dare somebody to do something. I triple dog dare you. Stick your tongue on that cold pole. Right? Now, why would anybody in their right mind do that? Because their pride is at stake. So even from a young age, we see how pride brings about quarrels. We grow up, it doesn't really change. We may not wrestle on the ground and fight, although I've known some adults to do that. But we might get into a shouting match. We might get into an argument. Why? Because I'm right. And I'm not letting this go until you acknowledge that I'm right. You know what that is? Pride. I don't care if you are right. When it becomes that much of an issue, it's not what's right that matters, it's that I am right. That's where pride comes in. But look at the flip side. Someone with wisdom is somebody who listens. There's an old adage that says we have one mouth, two ears. Shows that listening is more important than talking. Now, for most people, that's reversed. Most people talk way more than they listen. Have you ever had this experience? I'm not advocating eavesdropping, but have you ever been around a couple of people having a conversation with each other, and it's obvious that neither one of them are really listening? One person says this, one person says that, they go back and forth. And it has nothing to do with what the other person is saying. They're having two separate monologues that are just directed at each other. No clue what the other person is saying. Again, why? Because I'm going to say what's on my mind. You're going to hear me. I don't want to listen to you. What's important here is me. That's the attitude that comes out. That's the attitude of pride. Pride also says, I don't need your help, I'll do it myself. Say, okay, yeah, I've heard that from a 6- and a 7-year-old. True. But it's true of a lot of adults also. I would rather fail on my own than succeed with somebody else's help. That's pride. That pride will keep a lot of people away from God. I would rather fail on my own than succeed with God's help. Wow. That's some serious pride. But when we are open to listening to others, to gaining from their experience and their knowledge and their expertise, that's wisdom. It just makes sense, doesn't it? If you listen to somebody who maybe knows more than you or has experienced it before and you haven't, that's just smart. Yet how often do we not do that? Guys, how many times have we put something together and then read the directions? I mean, it just appears so many places in our lives. Proverbs 15:25 states, "The Lord tears down a proud man's house, but keeps the widow's boundaries intact." Now, the contrast here isn't necessarily between the proud and the humble per se. That's not really what the verse says. It's between the proud and the widow. We might say, what's the connection there? Often, though not always, often a wealthy man is also proud. He's proud of his abilities, proud of his accomplishments, proud of the things he has accumulated. It's all what I have done. You think of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel. At the height of his kingdom and all of his power and majesty, he got up on the top of his roof and he said, "Look at this magnificent kingdom that I have created." And that very moment God said, "For the next 7 years you're going to crawl on the ground like a wild animal." And he lost his mind. Because arrogance had convinced him that it was all because of him. Whereas, oftentimes, those who are poor, in those days it was the widow, because in those days the widow had no rights. They didn't have Social Security. They didn't have public programs to help them. They were really at the mercy of those who had. But it's the wealthy who tend to be self-reliant, while the widow or the poor would be more apt to rely on the Lord. Now, hopefully it won't take us being impoverished to realize that we need God. But sometimes it does. Sometimes God has to take away all of the things we're proud of before we realize how much we need Him, before we realize who we really are. One commentary puts it this way: "The most desolate who have God's aid have more permanent good than the self-reliant sinner." Why? Because they see their need and they come in humility to God. Proverbs 16:5 proclaims, "The Lord detests all the proud of heart. Be sure of this, they will not go unpunished." Now, it may happen in this life. It may not happen until eternity. But those who hold pride in their heart will be punished by God. It happened to Lucifer when he tried to overthrow God. It happened in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. When they listened to Satan, what was Satan's temptation? It wasn't, "Hey, eat this fruit." The temptation was, "You will be like God." It appealed to pride. And of course, the human race has suffered ever since. Proverbs 16:18, one of the more familiar verses in all the book of Proverbs. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. Better to be lowly in spirit and among the oppressed than to share plunder with the proud. How many of you have heard that phrase, pride goes before the fall? We heard it just this morning in Sunday school. This is where it comes from, right out of the book of Proverbs. And the next verse says, it's better to be poor in spirit, that same idea Jesus said in the Beatitudes, and even to be economically oppressed than to live in ill-gotten luxury with the proud and the self-sufficient. Now, it's true, not all destructions are caused by pride, but pride always ends in destruction. And usually, we lose the very thing we are most proud of having achieved, earned, owned, or accomplished. Proverbs 18:12 says virtually the same thing. Before his downfall, a man's heart is proud, but humility comes before honor. I like how one writer puts it. Pride has one foot in the grave and the other on a banana skin. It's true. And maybe you'll get away with it for a while, but it will catch up to you. And pride always has a horrible cost. Proverbs 21:4 calls out pride for what it really is. Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked, are sin. See, it's not just a character flaw. It's not just a little quirk in our personality. It is sin. Pride is spiritual cancer. It eats up the very possibility of love, of contentment, or even of common sense. Later in that same chapter, verse 24, the proud and arrogant man, mocker is his name, he behaves with overweening pride. Now, I got to admit, I had to get a dictionary on that one. I never used that word overweening before. I had no idea what it meant. You know what it means? Arrogant. This person acts with arrogant pride. How's that for a redundancy? That's not a redundancy. That's a recipe for disaster. We're proud of our pride. It doesn't get any worse than that. Proverbs 25:6 and 7 warn, do not exalt yourself in the king's presence. Do not claim a place among great men. It is better for him to say to you, come up here, than for him to humiliate you before a nobleman. Jesus taught a parable in Luke 14 that goes along these same lines about those who love to be honored and praised of men. We've got to be careful. And that's something we still deal with. You know, there are people that we call pushy today. They push themselves. And you find that even in Christian circles. You find people that are ambitious. They want to get ahead in things. And that's a tragedy because that's something the Christian life should never be. There's several other passages you have printed there. We just don't have time to go through them all this morning. But it's very clear that God honors humility and God despises and will ultimately destroy our pride. God has established the fact that there is a low door into heaven. Not because he's short and he wants other people to bow down to him in his presence, but it is only the humble that will place his trust in him. I'd like to conclude this morning with a poem entitled The Low Door of the Cross. O straight and narrow is the door, the little door of loss, by which we enter into Christ, the low door of the cross. But when we put away our pride and in contrition come, we find it is the only way that leads to God and home. O straight and lowly are the doors by which Christ comes to us. We bar the entrance gates of joy, and when he finds them thus, by strange and small doors of woe and want, of trial and of pain, he enters in to share our lives to our eternal gain. The narrow doors he brings us to, the little doors and low, what large rooms they will open on if only we will go. The strange small doors of work and want, straight doors of grief and pain, what riches they will lead us to, what everlasting gain. My appeal to you this morning is this. If you have pride in your heart about what you have done, what you can do, what you have, you're headed into trouble. God has made it very clear in His Word that it is only through humility, by recognizing who He is, recognizing ourselves, that we can enter into His presence.